to the Fantasy's Finest Fantasy Football Podcast. Here are your hosts, William Spencer, Jalen McQueen, and Mark Carter.
What's going on? Welcome back to the show. This is the Fantasy's Finest Podcast, and I'm your host, William Spencer. We are into it now. Draft season is about to get underway. We got a little bit of action for football. You know, we got the preseason game, the Hall of Fame game. We got to watch the Jets and the Browns duke it out. You smell that? That's football right there. It's in the air now. Training camp, all the news coming out of training camp. It is so great. Football is back. Real football will be around in a few weeks. We don't have much longer to wait for it. Don't you get excited? You know, your players, all the news is coming out, your favorite teams, you know, it's just great. You know, it's just, I love football, man. Football, it's my favorite time of year, you know, get training camp, all the buzz, you know, it just, I love it, man. I love it, but I'm not going to harp. We got a great show for you guys today. We have special guests coming on to help us break down the AFC South. We're still in our divisional breakdown series. We are almost done with the AFC, and we are taking on the AFC South in this episode. And like I said, we have a special guest, Mr. Eric DeWalt, will be joining us for our main segment later on in the show to help us get through the final part of the AFC conference. So then we can go on to the best conference, you know what I'm saying, the NFC. We get to talk about what's going on over there. But Mr. DeWalt is coming on, and he's going to help us break down the AFC South later on in the show. Particulars, you know, we got to talk about them. Make sure you follow the podcast on your favorite podcast platforms, you know, Google, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio. We are on Odyssey. I just checked, and I had put in, like, I don't know if you guys remember, like, last season, I was really trying to get on to Odyssey and make sure that the podcast was everywhere. And I put in for a request to have the show put on Odyssey. Never saw anything that came through the emails. And I thought we kind of got denied. But lo and behold, we on there. So if you're using the Odyssey app, you can check us out on there as well. Follow the host. You can follow me at @hype_finest. Jalen, Ace, as we like to call him on the show. He's changed his name again. So now he's back to Wholesome Ace on Twitter. I believe it's Wholesome_Ace. So he's back on that moniker for Twitter. You can follow Mark on Twitter too at MCKNUX, McNux. He can follow him on there too. I know he hasn't been on in a while, but I kind of got a feeling that, you know, he might be coming back this season. So, you know, keep your fingers crossed. He's one of the co-hosts for the show. He hasn't been on in a while, but, you know, it's always love to have, you know, the homies come on and talk some trash for fantasy football. So make sure you follow those guys on there. And then you can, of course, follow the podcast across your social medias at Fantasy's Finest too. We're everywhere. Threads, TikTok, YouTube, Twitter, you know, just search Fantasy's Finest and you will see us. So hit the subscribe button, the plus button, the follow button, whatever button you got to hit. Hit that, John, and show us some love. You can leave us some ratings, too, on Spotify and Apple. So that would be greatly appreciated as well. But we got a ton of stuff to cover before we get to break down the AFC South. We got news that we need to catch you guys up on. So let's get into it. Let's go to the news.
News and notes from around the NFL.
All right. Like I said, man, we got to catch you guys up on the latest going around the NFL. So let's begin with the New Orleans Saints. They got a lot of stuff going on. If you haven't been paying attention, Alvin Kamara, he met with the NFL commissioner. He met with Roger Goodell. He got slapped with a 3-game suspension stemming from his assault case from back in 2022. You knew the suspension was going to come around. We kind of talked about it last year. And, you know, because of what happened with his assault case, I actually thought that he was going to be suspended that season or see some kind of suspension time that season. But, you know, the case was pushed back. So the NFL decided that they weren't going to do anything as far as laying down punishments for Kamara last year, but it's come to a head. He's got a 3-game suspension. So the New Orleans Saints are looking to add to their backfield. The latest news on that was it was supposed to be Kareem Hunt, who was supposed to be coming in and signing with the team. He was expected to sign with the New Orleans Saints. He went in for a visit. The news was broken by Adam Schefter. And then all of a sudden, Diana Rossini followed up his tweet with a new update, basically saying that he went to New Orleans. He was supposed to visit with the team. He visited with the team, but then he turned around, left New Orleans without a deal, and now he's heading to Indianapolis to visit with the Colts. Now, this kind of tunnels right into my next news point, because we got to talk about what's going on with the Colts and Jonathan Taylor. But before we get to that, fantasy implications for New Orleans. This is just my perspective. I don't like muddled backfields. You already have Alvin Kamara, who's on a 3-game suspension. He comes back week 4. That's fine. But you have Jamal Williams, who was signed in through free agency this offseason, and you also have Kendre Miller, who was drafted just out of this draft. You also have Taysom Hill, who is annoying for fantasy managers because you want those goal line touches in particular to go to Alvin Kamara. So now you got Kamara, who will return, Jamal Williams, Kendre Miller, Taysom Hill, and then you have another running back who will likely come in. Maybe he's a depth guy. Maybe he sees a significant role, because you kind of get the feeling that you wouldn't really be looking for another running back if you trusted Kendre Miller. So I don't know what's going on in that dynamic, but it just says I don't even want to be bothered. Like, outside of maybe nabbing Alvin Kamara at a discount because of the 3-game suspension, his draft stock may be falling for a little bit. I don't see him going, too far down fantasy drafts, but if it's significant enough where I can pluck him at a discount, sure, I'll take it. But outside of that, the backfield just seems like it's about to be a headache, and I don't even feel like being bothered with it. So if I can't get Alvin Kamara, I'm good on the Saints backfield. Like, I can't, there's so much talent at the running back position. Even if there's other options that you may have in your eye on, I just don't feel like being bothered, man. It's nuts. Now, speaking on Jonathan Taylor, he's not even at the Colts training camp. He's not there. He's not participating in camp. He was there a week ago. He was shown at camp, but he wasn't participating in camp activities. If you don't know, Taylor is still looking for a new contract. He's on the final year of his rookie deal. He's upset at the lack of progress, looking for in the contract process. They haven't offered him a new deal. Jim Mercier came out and said that, they haven't exchanged any kind of number values. And we know that the NFL is viewing the running back position a bit different now. Major deals for the running back position haven't come down. So, with Taylor coming in on the last year of his deal, he's rightfully tight about not getting a new contract. Everybody else who was on the Indianapolis Colts, who were in their third years, have already signed deals, So it's like, where's my money at? And to be fair, Jonathan Taylor is one of the best running backs in the league. So for him to not even get an offer, and he's one of the best offensive pieces, if not the best offensive piece the Indianapolis Colts have, I would feel disrespected. And then Jim Irsay didn't help the situation with the comments that he made. So let me catch you up. Basically, the quick story is Taylor wants a new deal, went to go talk to Jim Irsay about it, had a meeting, and then shortly after the meeting, Jonathan Taylor requested a trade from the team. That's not a good sign. On top of that, Irsay came out and said some off-the-wall comments. I don't know if you've seen him or not, but here's one. He basically said, this is his quote, "If I die tonight and Jonathan Taylor is out of the league, no one's going to miss us. The league goes on." What? How do you say that about your stud running back? I mean, everybody's going to remember Jim Irsay, and I'm not going to get into his particulars on why he made the news and why people won't forget about Jim Irsay. But to say that in reference to, and he's come out and said, you know, I wasn't really talking about Jonathan Taylor, blah, blah, blah. Bro, that's the only person you could have been talking about if we're keeping it funky. So let's not do that. You made those comments in response to Jonathan Taylor or the situation that's involving Jonathan Taylor. So, you know, for you to go and say, oh, we'll pay our players and, you know, whenever it's time for you to get paid, you'll get paid. Well, he's on the final year of his deal. And if you're not going to pay him and you're not going to trade him because he already came out and said that they weren't going to trade Jonathan Taylor, what are you going to do with him? That's, you know, you're not going to do one. You're not going to do the other. So now you're stuck in neutral. Let's just be honest, you know, and like I said, the running back market is all screwed up. The NFL teams don't want to pay big money to running backs. But Jonathan Taylor's 24 years old. He's a stud. I mean, he's shown you before. And last year, I would consider an outlier, especially since the offense was horrible last season. But, you know, if there's one thing you want to keep around for your rookie quarterback to help him ease his way into the NFL, is to have a good run game. So you need Jonathan Taylor. Speaking of running backs, Ronald Jones was suspended for 2 games for violating the NFL's performance-enhancing policy. Good job. Good job, Ronald Jones. You know, the Cowboys are thin at the running back position. They have bodies back there. But you're looking at, you know, Rico Dowdle, Deuce Vaughn, who was drafted out of the draft this year. You know, you have they're not household names yet. So you're kind of like, you know, as a Cowboys fan, you're looking like, all right, well, we need somebody back there to help Tony Pollard out in the event that something happens to him, because we've already seen that kind of scenario in the playoffs against the San Francisco 49ers. Pollard went down, the run game, you know, came to a screeching halt. So, you know, Cowboys fans are looking at the situation like, all right, let's get somebody back there to help out Tony Pollard. But Ronald Jones will miss the first 2 games of the season. Maybe this prompts the Cowboys to bring back Ezekiel Elliott. Come on, Jerry. You keep saying the door is open. Let's see something happen. Tight end O.J. Howard was released from the Raiders. Are we looking at Michael Mayer season? The only other tight end on the roster that could prevent that from happening is Austin Hooper. And I think he's kind of done. So Michael Mayer, might want to put him on your watch list. You can get him for cheap in fantasy. Keep your eyes on that one. ESPN's Jeremy Fowler reports that Bucs coaches see star potential in running back Rashad White. Fowler reports that the Bucs have expanded his route tree this offseason, and that could be a potential value in PPR formats. White went 50 for 58 in receptions last season in his rookie year. He's currently coming off boards as the running back 26. So you can get him at a pretty solid discount. You know, the Bucs offense isn't really going to light it up. I feel like it's not really going to light it up with the wide receivers. You're looking at either Baker Mayfield or Kyle Trask coming in. And, you know, unless Kyle Trask is a diamond in the rough, so to speak, you're looking at a situation where the Bucs offense isn't going to light it up like it has in the past under Tom Brady. The downgrade in quarterback, this is my opinion, the downgrade in quarterback, you know, just doesn't look good for Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. So maybe you see more work coming out of the backfield with Rashad White. And, you know, if he's going to be catching passes out of the backfield, that's a good thing. Good for PPR, good for the running back position for the Bucs, good for Rashad White. So if you're looking for, or you're doing if you're doing a zero RB, Rashad White might be a guy that you could be interested in later on in the draft. But that'll do it for the news. Now let's get into the main segment and break down the AFC South for you fantasy managers. And welcome our guest.
Divisional breakdown, the AFC South.
All right. Now, we already mentioned that we're going to be breaking down the AFC South for this segment, for our main segment. But I told you guys earlier, we have a guest. Mr. Eric DeWalt is joining the show. He's coming on to the podcast to help us break down the AFC South. So, Mr. Eric DeWalt, how are you doing? Say hello to the people for me.
Hey, man. First, let me say thanks for having me on. Hello, everybody. So glad to be part of this amazing show. I've had a chance to listen to multiple episodes and just ready to jump in, man.
I really appreciate you coming on for us. Now, make sure that you're following our guest. Mr. Eric DeWalt can be found on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram under his Twitter. His handle is SatchelFF. That's SatchelFF. You can follow him across all his social media platforms. Like I said, he's on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. He has his own platform, his own fantasy football network that we'll be getting into a little bit, because we got a couple questions, you know, kind of introduce you to the audience, because we need to, you gotta feel like family now when you come in. So we got to make this reoccurring thing. We want to have you back on, you know, whenever you have the time. And then, you know, I want to open up so the audience can get to know you. How long have you been playing fantasy football and been doing content creation?
Fantasy football, I've been playing at least 22 or 23 years. Possibly a little longer than that. But over 20 years. Like,
Okay. You are a seasoned vet.
Yeah, I go back before you could draft on a line, okay? I'm just
All right, so for everybody, because I'm pretty sure our audience is around 25 to 34, 35-ish.
Okay.
How was it, and this is not one of the questions, this is probably a good sub-question, but how was it like drafting and keeping score before everything was online? Because I've only read about it.
Well, yeah. Let me say, the easy part was like for football was just the organization, right? Because it's only one game a week. But like fantasy baseball, there were literally like mail chains, and the stats and everything, you know, and things would get mailed out, and the rosters would get, you know, like I said, it was just a mail chain, a weekly mail chain. So it would be literally 2-3 weeks before somebody finds out, like, if they won their league or whatever, because, somebody had to, by hand, bring all this information together. And then, like, in the, you know, mid and late 90s, of course, with the advent of the internet, you know, people were able to upload things. And, of course, you know, Yahoo and CBS Sports and ESPN and other places, you know, started creating fantasy sites, you know, so it made it easier, but you still had to do your draft in person. And so, especially like if you had a big league, you know, we would have times where like you would have to write your pick down and pass it around. It's like you're at a big table, like I might not hear you say Peyton Manning, right? Mm-hmm. And then my pick, and I'm thinking I'm drafted Peyton Manning or whatever. So, like, we had to literally have this list, you know, so you could review it, you know, before you made your pick and that type of thing. Like, now it's also easy and convenient. Like, you wonder, dang, how could we have survived back then? but it all more camaraderie, I think, than you have now too. So, but I'll talk more about that later. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, that was great, because like I said, I've only read about how fantasy football used to be. I've seen some articles say that you had to go through the newspaper and get the stats. The commissioner had to go through the newspaper and get the stats for the leagues, and everybody had to write up their, you know, their players' numbers by whatever the league settings were. It was crazy. It sounded like a lot of work.
It was.
I don't know how fun it would be to have to do all of that every week. Mm-hmm. I might end up with more gray hair doing it that way then.
Well, because I thought about that. And one thing I realized is, because I'm thinking about it in today's context, but then, like, we didn't have smartphones, we didn't have YouTube, we didn't have as many things to take our attention, right? So, you know, I could read a book, or I could, you know, do a crossword puzzle, or I could do these fantasy football stats. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, it's a lot easier to do it when your options aren't as entertaining. it would be today. So yeah, like today's world, like, you know, you could never imagine somebody doing that, right?
Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah. All right. So you have created your own fantasy football network. Can you give us some details on that? Like, what do you have going on?
Okay. So Satchel obviously is a brand, right? Of, you know, we're trying to promote fantasy football content. But we also have our own platform. So eventually, and let me just quick plug if it's okay.
Yeah, go right ahead. That's why I asked. Yeah,
we're beta testers. So go to satchelff.com and enter your email address if you're interested in being a beta tester. But we've created our own fantasy football app that's designed for mobile phones. It's also designed to help people stay in touch with each other better than the current options. So I'm going to venture to say you're probably in what, at least 10 leagues or so, 5-10 leagues.
Wait, I can't give an answer right now without
Around. Here's the important part. How many of those leagues do you have a separate app or a separate texture for all y'all to stay in touch with each other and talk smack to each other and keep up with?
A lot of them. I definitely have a lot.
Right. So the Satchel is going to solve that problem by putting the text messaging, the social, basically social media type features inside the app. So you can easily communicate with everybody in your league. You can challenge each other and talk smack to each other. And, you know, the rest of the league can vote on, you know, who they thought did the best in the battle. You know, all these type of things that we enjoy doing, or send each other gifts or memes or whatever, you know, you can do within the app. So you won't have to go outside to a separate text group, you know, to talk about what's going on in your fantasy football app. So that's the goal with Satchel, is something that is very user-friendly, like I said, designed with an app for using a phone in mind, and not an adaption of a PC website, you know. And so it'll be much more intuitive. Like I said, it's taking a lot of cues from social media, and we're infusing social media and fantasy football together. And so like I said, this 2023 season, we're going to beta test it. And so I need some beta testers, and, you know, because I need some Android users and some iPhone users. And then, you know, roll this thing out. And 2024, you know, you should be seeing Satchel commercials and things of that nature.
Okay. I'm going to have to go ahead and sign up after we're done here, because I like new apps. I like applications and stuff like that. And anything that's can be geared towards fantasy football, I always like to give a test run. So I'm down. So you will be getting my email shortly after this show is concluded.
Okay. Appreciate that. And yeah, this has been, we started in 2020. So this has not been a fly-by-night thing. We've done a lot of research, a lot of work, a lot of money. A lot of things have gone into making this product. So I really, really need, you know, your audience help to make sure it's, you know, well-received when the final version comes out.
Yeah, most definitely, man. I'm looking forward to it. Now, you've been in the game for over 20 years, 20 plus years. What can you say is your favorite thing about fantasy football?
Couple things. Like anything, the competition and the camaraderie that comes with it. Because what I found is I literally have friends that are just fantasy football friends. Like, we'll go 6 months without talking, texting, or anything. And then, like, in July, everything picks right back. You know, it's just like, hey, what's going on? When's the draft? You know, and then all of a sudden you're texting every day with these people, right? So that part of it. And just how it makes you smarter about the game of football and how everything is so interconnected, you know, because as a, you know, growing up as a kid and a fan of your local team, you know, your view is very slanted, right? But when you start to look at fantasy and, you know, you're trying to understand trends and stats and how one player's addition or subtraction impacts the other players and all those things, you know, it really truly changes how you watch the game.
I can agree with that. I know for me, for example, you know, I'm a Cowboys fan, and when you live in Philadelphia and you talk about the Cowboys, you know, you kind of get the side eye. But what also comes with being a Cowboys fan and from Philly is the fact that you're constantly told that you're being delusional about certain things. So for me,
right.
I agree with the sentiment that fantasy football helps broaden your spectrum on understanding not only the game, but other players and teams outside of your own. And I think I can agree with that. That's one thing. That's an aspect that I appreciate about doing fantasy football too. Because now I can talk about the Cowboys till the cows come home, but now I have a better understanding of what's going on around the league. And yeah, so I totally get where you're coming from.
And also I find I watch, like, before fantasy football, I'm probably not watching Cleveland or Cincinnati, you know, in November. You know what I'm saying? But yeah. That's watching because, you know, I'm in so many leagues that I have a vested interest in somebody on that field. You know what I mean? So that's part of it too.
Yep. I can tell you from firsthand experience, me and my boys watch the Red Zone.
Oh, yeah.
As soon as it comes on at 1 o'clock, we are sitting down and we're watching it together. And it's like we're going through all the teams, all of the it's been fun since they've been around to be able to watch the games with me. So I definitely understand. All right. So you've done it for a long time. You've got your experience. So out of the entirety of your fantasy football career, who is a fantasy player that you just had to leave your draft with? Like you got, like you said, you got years in. So what was one player that was like, you know what? I got to have him no matter what.
I'll say one guy that, for me, the first guy that fit that bill for me was LaDainian Tomlinson.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah. Like he would always just put up monster numbers. He was one of the few backs who would get as many carries as he did and would stay on the field on third down and catch a lot of passes too. And it wasn't just outlet pass. Like he could make something happen when he got the ball. So that's probably the first person I could think of that was like the must have guy. You know, Brian Westbrook had a little run in there. You know, obviously there have been other guys, you know, Thomas Jones, you know, had a nice little run different times. But yeah, first person come to mind would be LaDainian Tomlinson.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one, right? I can't. Yeah, that's very solid. Very solid. All right. So we got your introduction finished. Let's get into this divisional breakdown. So now we're going to go through the AFC South. We've got most of the AFC done. This is the last stop before we get to go over to the NFC. So we're going to talk about the Jacksonville Jaguars. And, you know, we always have to highlight the quarterbacks because they are, at least to me, they're the driving force of fantasy football because you tend to take their skill players because they have a good quarterback. And Trevor Lawrence has been talked about this offseason as one of the top quarterbacks coming into his, what, second year, third year?
Third.
He's looking to take another step forward. He finished as a QB7 last year. How do you feel about Trevor Lawrence heading into 2023?
I expect him to really establish himself in the upper echelon, to be honest with you, because it's his second year in the offense. If you look at what Peterson did his second year with Carson Wentz, you know, Carson Wentz could have easily been the MVP that year had he not gotten hurt. So you got to figure Lawrence, you know, a more talented player, I would say probably, you know, should excel. And also playing in a warm weather place, right? And most of the games, even their away games in Indianapolis is at a dome. So he's not going to face a lot of bad weather, things like that. And then you factor in the running backs, the ATN coming back from injury, you know, fully healthy now. You factor in Ridley. You know, I want to make a joke about betting, but I'm not going to do that. but I think Trevor Lawrence would be a safe bet. Well, I guess I did do it. But, I expect him to elevate. I expect him to be a top five guy by the end of the season. Yeah.
Okay. Well, he's coming off boards. Fantasy Data has him coming off as the QB8. So a few spots higher. This doesn't sound like a bad thing. I think One of the things that has really been talked about this offseason is the presence of Calvin Ridley to the wide receiver position. You know, he had his issues in Atlanta. He ended up getting traded. And now he finds himself with a young quarterback. And that's, I think this is part of the reason why Trevor Lawrence has been talked up so much, because we saw the progression from his first year with Urban Meyer to what he was able to do with Doug Peterson. Now you've given him a better weapon at the wide receiver position in Calvin Ridley. But Calvin Ridley can, he may be a gift and a curse. And the only reason I say he's a curse is not because of his fantasy potential in that offense, but what it impacts with everybody else as the pass catchers for the team, because you still have Zay Jones, you still have Christian Kirk, you got Evan Ingram, but Calvin Ridley is looked at as that piece that's going to come in and take a lot of targets away from Christian Kirk, who led the team in targets last season. Do you feel that the rest of the wide receiver core behind Calvin Ridley can still be productive and valuable fantasy assets?
I believe so. I definitely think so, Kurt, because if Ridley, we also got to figure, you're going to have a humble, motivated Ridley. So he's probably not going to, you know, pump his chest and demand the ball or things like that, you know, not this year. So I think he could allow Kirk to get better matchups, right? Which could allow, you know, could create more big plays. So I do think there's an opportunity there. Now, obviously, Jones and Ingram, you know, right. I mean, those are going to be the guys I think that, you know, you may want to draft very late as backups or something. I would not target them. But I said, I do think Ridley can help Kirk's value, whereas he may not get as many targets, but he may just have as many yards, because I think he'll be have an opportunity for more big plays. Because the coverage, I think the coverage, if Ridley is what we expect him to be, the coverage is going to roll to Ridley.
Yeah, because, and I've been seeing some of this content that's been coming out of Jaguars camp, man. Ridley looks like he has not lost a step. Like, he's got a year off from the suspension. He looks really quick.
Like, he's going to be motivated, right? Like, you know, who's going to be more motivated than the guy that had to sit out a year, right?
Yeah, and Christian Kirk saw 133 targets last season. I'm kind of going with the mantra that that's kind of what Calvin Ridley could be expecting to see as the number one. You know, the Jaguars do have one of the most more improving passing teams in the NFL. They're not really known for running the ball. But, you know, you have a quarterback like Trevor Lawrence who's going to be able to throw the ball pretty well and often. So you kind of get that kind of workload. Now, I will agree with what you said on Zay Jones. You're not going to have to take him earlier in the draft because, you know, you're going to have Calvin Ridley and Christian Kirk. They'll more than likely be the top two options coming off the board. But Zay Jones did make a case as to why he shouldn't be left out of the group. He had 121 targets last season. He may be giving up some work to Calvin Ridley, or he could be taking some work from Christian Kirk. And he was pretty solid in the red zone. He only had five touchdowns last season, but you still have a guy who you can rely on that now, like you mentioned, Calvin Ridley is going to be pulling defenders towards him, you know, in an attempt to stop him. So if you got more from Calvin Ridley, where else could you go with the ball? And I think Zay Jones could be that, late round flyer or late round target that you won't have to spend much on, but I think he's still going to be a big part, or at least a significant part, in the Jaguars on.
Yeah, because there are a couple of things that I think were, could have hurt his value going into this year. Obviously Ridley, right? We talked about that. But also, when you're talking about like third and fourth options, you also have to look at game situation, right? Like, if the Jags aren't behind all the time, are they going to be throwing as much in the second half of games? You know, so let's just say they throw five or six less passes a game, you know, or because, you know, they're ahead or, you know, trying to kill the clock or whatever. You know, that's, you know, you multiply that over 17 games, that's a lot of targets that somebody's missing out on, you know?
yep.
So I think things like that, you know, is large. I mean, you know, right, his college running back is in the backfield, right? So is that going to be his safety blanket? You know, how many targets is he going to take away? So yeah, for me, after I get out of those top two receivers with Jacksonville, yeah, everybody else would be, like I said, a very late round flyer. Just
death. I agree. Now, here's one thing. How do you feel? I have to ask this before I say anything else, because I want to get your perspective on this running back since you mentioned him. Travis Etienne, how do you feel about him coming into this season? Because he had a pretty good year last year. He did get caught up with a couple injuries. He got tripped up towards the end. He now, I won't totally, you know, praise him. He did cost me a chip. I actually lost to my son. He's going to be 10 in September, right? And me and him ended up, he was, you know, pestering me to make a trade with him. And I ended up trading Keenan Allen and Alvin Kamara for Travis Etienne and DeAndre Hopkins. And both of them ended up getting hurt at the last, in the playoffs. And then Keenan Allen put me out of my misery because Justin Herbert kept throwing him the ball in our playoff game. So I'm not going to, you know, let Etienne slide, but he's coming into another year with Doug Peterson and that offense. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't feel like the fantasy community is really gathering around the possibility of Etienne excelling. Like, so that's why I'm asking, what do you think? What's your perspective on Etienne this year?
I think he's going to do well. I think he's going to be a top 15 back easy. But a chance to easily be a top 10 back. I think the only thing that may stop him from being upper echelon is, you know, Peterson likes to keep his backs fresh, right? He doesn't like to just ride one guy, at least not when, you know, if you look at what he did with the Eagles, right? Best teams, they kind of had it running back by committee kind of thing. But I think with his big playability and you know, they drafted him high, so they need to get some capital out of him. Like, you know, you don't save your running backs looking toward the future, right? Because, you know, you're only expecting 4 or 5 good years out of him. So I expect him to take off this year. And also I think he'll just get more opportunities to run the ball because I think they'll probably be more, even more competitive. So I'm looking for a big year from him. But I will give you this piece of advice, you know, after you told me about the trade you made. as a general rule, don't trust Clemson skill guys, okay? Defensive players, great, you know, skill guys, you know, kind of up and down, you know, like, you know.
Yeah, that trade came back to bite me. But I told my son, he's still talking about the champ. He ended up winning the chip in our family league. So I have to make it a point to bring him down a notch or two this year. So I'll be watching my trades when I deal with him. But fantasy managers are seemingly concerned about the role Tank Bigsby, the new running back who was drafted out of the 2023 NFL draft. They seem concerned. And this is probably one of the things that has led to the fact that, you know, everybody's kind of down or out on Travis Etienne. You know, Bigsby is a bigger back, 6 foot, 210 pounds. He's got 4 or 5 speed. He's a what do they call him in his combine records? It was like he's a back that can get yards after contact. He has elusiveness to him. So the concern now was, you know, could Bigsby take away those early down work away from Travis Etienne? Do you think that that's a concern, that a rookie can come in and possibly take some food off of a Travis Etienne's plate? Or is it just, you know, this is a move that betters, because as you mentioned, you know, Doug Peterson likes to keep his running backs fresh. Is this something that can help or hurt Travis Etienne?
I think it'll help him because I think, given, you know, he's had, a couple years, you know, of course we know the injuries haven't been kind to him. And I think, and also looking at, you know, not look at mindsets. This is a guy, you know, who knows he can do it, looking to establish himself. I think having somebody like Tank is just going to motivate him even more to, you know, stay on his P's and Q's. And I expect to see, you know, some big plays from Travis this year, to be honest with you. I think he's going to be a threat in passing game also. And, you know, can't forget the continuity with the quarterback, especially for a rookie. That might be hard. It might be hard for Tank to overcome ATN's continuity with Lawrence, right? Because they've been together so long. So, you know, I don't, that would not preclude me from drafting him, you know, if it's in the right spot. Now, I'm not going to pick him in the first round, but
yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, he's coming off boards. He's listed as the RB12. Like I said, per fantasy data, he's that fringe RB1, but I think it's safer to probably take him as an RB2 for your fantasy teams.
Right.
That way you don't, it's more of a, you know, you didn't reach for this particular player. But like you said, he has the ability to break away, to make big runs. He was fifth in breakaway runs last season with 16. A 7.3 breakaway rate, ninth best in the NFL among running backs. So he's got the potential there. And like you said, that connection with him and Trevor Lawrence is something that I think should be brought up to the forefront more often than not when it comes to talking about Travis Etienne.
Yeah.
But let's wrap up this part. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I don't think he'll score a bunch of touchdowns, or at least not like goal line touchdowns, that type of thing. You know, I think that's where having the other guys might hurt him. I don't think he's going to, you know, be a guy that has like, you know, 15, 18 touchdowns.
Yeah.
You know, I think he'll be the guy that gets him to the red zone and he comes out of the game kind of thing.
Yeah, between the 20s kind of guy?
Yeah, that's what I think. You know, he'll break a long one and, you know, and have to come out and get a breather and somebody else will go score or something. You know, that's kind of, like I said, that's why I wouldn't pick him too high, because I don't think he's going to get enough run in those goal line or inside the five situations to get, you know, those easy touchdowns.
Mm-hmm. And Evan Engram, let's wrap it up with talking about the tight end position real quick, because me personally, the tight end position has always been the most difficult to draft because, and I've said this before, after you get past the first four or five guys, it's like kind of a bigger drop off. But how do you feel? I think Evan Engram is somebody that should be considered later on in the draft. What's your take on Evan Engram?
Yeah, for me, he's a late round flyer. I would not, if I could help it, not count on him to be my top tight end on my team. Like I said, I just, especially with Ridley there, like I said, I think Kirk won't suffer much, but I do think the other guys will. And you know, when I think of Engram, like, they're probably, you know, they're probably, what, at least 10 to 12 other tight ends that, you know, probably like five of them you never even heard of whose production is going to match Engram's by the end of this year. So, yeah, I am not that high on Engram this year. Like I said, especially, you know, somebody's got to suffer, right? Like I said, I'm expecting 18 to have a big year and expecting Ridley to have a big year and Kirk to maintain. So somebody's got to suffer. And unfortunately, I think that's going to be Engram. I wouldn't trust him as my starting tight end.
Well, okay. That's pretty solid warning. Changes have been made to the Jaguars offense. So somebody's going to eat and somebody is going to have to give up their food. So yeah, that's a good warning to have. Let's keep it moving. We're going to go into the Tennessee Titan, Ryan Tannehill. I don't think we need to talk too much about him because not going to be a quarterback that, you know, fantasy managers are going to be drafting high. He's likely going to be a quarterback that you can either wait on in a 2QB league or super flex format, something like that. You're not really taking Ryan Tannehill in redraft leagues. He might be a backup, but because of where he's being drafted outside the top 20. So you're looking at a guy who you can get off the waivers in case of an emergency, something like that. But he does get DeAndre Hopkins. He gets another year with Treylon Burks. Austin Hooper is in Las Vegas now. So you have a lot of people who were talking about Chidobe Okonkwo coming into this season. He was supposed to be a lot of people's sleepers. But you consider the pass-catching options that Ryan Tannehill has now. Do you think that he's going to impact what they can do? And especially when you consider the Titans offense as a whole?
As in, will he like handicap them? I think they trust him for the most part. You know, if anything's a handicap for the receivers, I think it's the fact that things start and end with Derrick Henry, right? And I think also with them having a more defensive minded coach, I think just the idea of okay, trying to light up the scoreboard just isn't how they generally approach the game. So I think just think that'll hurt the targets, not so much Tannehill. But I do think they trust, you know, in Derrick Henry a great deal, or the running game a great deal. So I do think that would hurt them. But, you know, well, like you said, Tannehill, and that's why he's not getting drafted high, because they just don't throw the ball enough for him to warrant being drafted that high, right? Yep. You know, there are a lot of bad quarterbacks who we would draft high in fantasy because they throw the ball so much.
But that's a good point. Ryan Tannehill does not throw the ball a lot, and I think that that's something to consider when you're targeting guys like DeAndre Hopkins and Treylon Burks, because we're so used to what DeAndre Hopkins has done in the past that we discount the fact that he's in a much different offensive scheme than he has been in the past. You know, you look at what he's done in Houston, they threw the ball a lot. You look at what he's done with Kyler Murray in Arizona, he received a lot of targets. But you're coming into an offense with Ryan Tannehill, and that's not the thing that he's done. He's been very efficient in the past, but last season we kind of saw what happens when those wheels, when efficiency is thrown out the window. And, you know, we look at wide receivers like A.J. Brown, who was there and during his stint. You know, A.J. Brown was never a top 10 wide receiver in fantasy football because of the system that they were in. So expecting DeAndre Hopkins to come in, and then, because I've had people, and this is funny, I've had people on social media say, you know, DeAndre Hopkins, he's going to get all the targets. That's true. I'm not disputing that, because he's going to get a lot of targets because he's the guy. But when you look at the passing attempts that Ryan Tannehill, or maybe it's somebody else that's coming in, maybe Ryan Tannehill wears out his welcome during the season. Now you have Will Levis, who was just drafted. You have Malik Willis maybe coming in to
support
Ryan
2 years ago. Right.
Could those things be factored in? Because if that happens, because we've seen it happen with Indianapolis when they had Matt Ryan and was like, oh, well, you know, Matt Ryan's going to be the guy. Then they benched him for like, what, 3 games, and Sam Ehlinger was coming in. Like, yep. Those possibilities have to be considered. So when you're looking at DeAndre Hopkins, I'm not going to say don't draft him. You know, his ADP is around wide receiver 20, 22-ish. So he's like the wide receiver 2. I think that's
right. Yeah, that's right. I think that's about right. But yeah, the name is going to be much bigger than the production. You know, a few things, right? Like you say, he's on a team that just won't throw the ball as much. Number two, you know, he just joined the team, right? He wasn't there for many camps, all those other things. So there is there's somewhat of a learning curve. You know, with everybody getting used to him getting implemented in the offense. And then number three, you know, I think at some point the natural progression down, that, you know, you lose a step or whatever, like, you know, there didn't seem to be, you know, there weren't like 8 teams just after him or offering him a ton of money and stuff. So apparently what people saw on tape, you know, they were cautious about it at least, right? When you consider, you know, the level of player he is or was, and his name value, you know, didn't seem to generate a ton of interest. You know, now, of course, things could have we don't know about, but, you know, didn't seem like teams just clamoring after him or, you know, offering huge contracts or anything. So that makes me think that, you know, maybe he's starting to on the downside a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Now, does the presence of DeAndre Hopkins impact Treylon Burks and Chidobe Okonkwo?
I think on a normal team it would, but on this team, I don't know. I mean, because they're so run heavy. Yeah. Because they're so run heavy, the impact it has on any of those guys is very minimal, because there's still going to be so many passes, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, Burks might get better coverage, you know, more better looking coverage. Or more opportunity against man-to-man or something like that, one-on-one. But how often is he going to be able to take advantage of it? And, you know, back to, I guess, your earlier question, I guess Tannehill could possibly handicap them some in that area, you know, because I'm sure he's not coached to, you know, take shots down the field and that kind of thing, right? So, you know, having ideal coverage against you is good if you're going long or deep, right? Because that's when you can really make the defense pay. But if you're still dropping off short passes and things like that, you know, you're not really taking advantage of the more opportunity that the defense is presenting. You know, maybe it's because you don't trust quarterback, or it's just not your style of play. But the Titans don't seem to be that type of team.
Yeah, they're the type to lean on Derrick Henry, and that's been their mantra for the last few seasons. You know, he's the moving force in that offense. But we have to talk about Derrick Henry too, and not too much, because I kind of feel like Derrick Henry is still going to be productive. But I think a lot of people are starting to be concerned. He's approaching that 30-year-old mark. And, you know, the stigma about running backs when they hit 30, that's when the drop-off comes. And everybody's been trying to predict that drop-off for Derrick Henry. Could you see it being this season that this is the year that the drop-off comes? Derrick Henry is just not going to be the guy anymore. He turns 30 in January before the season is over. But, you know, this could be it.
Now, barring any, like, real injury, I think he's going to be fine. Now, is he going to have like his best season? No, but I think he's going to, you know, I think he's the exception. I mean, physically, everything about him is like an exception, right? His height, his stature, right? You know, he's not built like other guys. I think also when you get the ball as much as he does, you know, it's kind of like how football was played, or NFL football was played, like, let's say back in the 80s and 90s. Where the running back has a chance to get a rhythm, and he can, you know, in the line, you know, line has a chance to find their rhythm, and all those things that have kind of been lost as the NFL has gotten away from primarily being a running league. So I think with as many carries as he's going to get, I think he'll always be able to find his rhythm. So I think he'll be fine, right? I really don't anticipate him having a major drop. You know, I still think he's going to be a top running back. I still think every week his name is going to be up there with, you know, most yards, most carries. You know, it's going to lead to some touchdowns. You know, he's going to have a few games with multiple touchdowns. I anticipate him dropping off much.
Yeah, he was doing that last year too. Week 3 through 11, I kind of wanted to highlight this. He was the RB2, led the league in attempts and rushing yards, averaging 23.3 fantasy points per game. He doesn't give you that PPR push. You know, he doesn't catch a lot of passes out of the backfield. So it's like, you know, you don't look for Derrick Henry to do that. But even in PPR formats, Derrick Henry's still been one of the best running backs in the league. And like you said, but he gets so much work that you can't really discount that, because he is the Titans offense. They don't rely on Ryan Tannehill to really win them games, or, you know, beat teams with passing, not call on him much to do that, because they have Derrick Henry back there. And I have to agree too. I think he's along the lines of guys like Adrian Peterson, that they're just outlier freaks of nature that come in every so often in the NFL and they just take over for the span that they're in. And I think Derrick Henry is that kind of guy. I don't see him, you know, he just gets too much work to concern yourself with him falling off. And I mean, you know, like you said, outside of him getting hurt, I don't see that production falling off. He's just a volume guy. He's going to be a monster.
Right. And because their offense is generally different than most of the team, you know, most teams in the league, you know, I think that just puts more pressure on like the linebackers and defensive backs who are playing against a Derrick Henry. Number one, you know, they're just not used to having to come up and run support that often. Number two, they're definitely not used to having to tackle anybody that big. Okay. You can't discount that.
Not at all. I think there was a news clip of the Titans head coach was like, you know, somebody asked him, how many kids do you think it would take to tackle Derrick Henry? And he was like, you know, are you sure? Is this a question you want to ask me? He's like, should be more along the lines of like, how many kids are going to survive the encounter with trying to tackle Derrick Henry? Or how many of them are going to die trying to tackle him? Because he's just that imposing. He's imposing to grown men. You know what I'm saying? Like we all remember the clip of Josh Norman trying to tackle him. It was just like embarrassing. That's one grown man tossing another grown man out of the way. He's a beast. Now let's keep it moving. We have the Indianapolis Colts on deck. Anthony Richardson, tremendous hype coming into camp. I always like to highlight this because, you know, you have a new quarterback coming in and, you know, you have the old quarterback, you know, making statements like, you know, I'm going to work and, you know, I'm going to try and be the QB one to start the season because, you know, they signed Gardner Minshew in the offseason and, you know, they drafted Anthony Richardson high. But, you know, Gardner is like, you know, I'm going to put my best foot forward and I'm going to go out there and give it my all. And it's like, right. All right, bro, like dial it down. We know Anthony Richardson is going to come in. And I don't think this is being talked about enough either. What Shane Steichen brings to the Colts or what he could potentially bring to the Colts should be considered a plus for Anthony Richardson coming into these. And like, where do you think Anthony Richardson could be at as far as an asset for fantasy managers?
Whoa. That's really hard to say because, you know, the Colts,
they suck.
they suck. And also there's, and to your point, right? We don't know, like, obviously, we know Richardson's going to be the guy. We just don't know when. And also with the running back situation, with the injuries and then Taylor wanting out, you know, it's just a lot of noise and things going on. I do think if Richardson's given the chance to play early, I think because if I'm coming in there and I'm managing this situation, my job is to manage and teach Richardson, right? So I'm going to throw the ball a lot because I'm not too worried about wins and losses this year because we suck. But I know every pass, Richardson is learning more and we got more tape. We can coach him up and other things. So I'm going to throw the ball a lot. But also with the athleticism and strength, he could be a good goal line threat too, right? He could get some touchdowns, you know, take some touchdowns away from running backs or things like that. You know, almost like a Jalen Hurts kind of thing I could see. So I do think he might be worth a late round flyer. But not somebody that I think, you know, I wouldn't count on him in the first month of the season. And also he's going to have to find his way too, right? But I do expect that at some point in the season, he will put up some decent fantasy numbers, if nothing else, because I think he'll get some rushing touchdowns too.
Yeah, I think. And when you look at how Shane Steichen ran the offense for the Philadelphia Eagles last year, second best overall offense in 2023, they were ninth in passing yards and fifth in rushing yards. But you saw how Steichen was using Jalen Hurts, not just as a passer, but as a runner. And you know, when it comes to fantasy football, the rushing quarterback is like the bee's knees, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Fantasy managers, they love that aspect of the rushing quarterback, what he brings in yards and potential touchdowns. And I kind of feel like that's
exactly
something that Richardson can bring to the table if we see something similar to what Steichen did with the Eagles, because not only does he have the athleticism, he does have a pretty solid group of weapons. When you look at Michael Pittman, you look at Alec Pierce, Josh Downs was drafted to be the slot guy for the Colts this year. They've retooled that wide receiver core. And then you have the tight ends. You have Cox, Woods, and Granson. That's the only frustrating part with me, because I've been like a Mo Ali Cox truther for like the last two seasons.
Okay.
And it hasn't paid off at all. And I feel like it's not any fault of Mo Ali Cox. I think the talent is there. His usage just doesn't translate to what the Colts are trying to do. And then the offense was horrible last year, even when Matt Ryan was in the game. So I'm hoping, you know, I'm not saying Mo Ali Cox is going to come out and be Dallas Goedert, but if we can get something similar to that, you know, has Cox being one of the best, he's one of the best blockers on the team. I think he's a pretty good pass catcher. He just needs the opportunity to be able to showcase that more often than just a handful of games here or a handful of games there. But Michael Pittman, like in these guys, Michael Pittman, Alec Pierce, Josh Downs, those those last two in particular, they're being drafted outside of the top 50. Michael Pittman is, I believe, the wide receiver 34 on fantasy data. I like that spot for him. You're getting
That could be good value.
Yeah, you're getting a value at a guy who's going to be a wide receiver one. He's going to get him later on in the draft. He's more than likely going to see the lion's share of targets.
Mm-hmm. Probably going to be behind all the time, so they're going to be throwing.
Yep, they're going to be trying to get back into them games, so you got more passing attempts coming. You always have to look at what value players get, even if they're on bad teams. I kind of feel like that should be something that can be talked about a little bit more. Like Alec Pierce, for example, he's in his second year. He's got a good rookie quarterback who's willing to throw the ball downfield, and you have an offense that looks like it can get that done too if Richardson is, in fact, the guy who starts the season. I kind of feel like he will be, just off the simple fact that we've kind of seen what Gardner Minshew can do. But I do agree with the point that you are trying to build up your quarterback, your rookie quarterback, and you may not want to throw him out there to the wolves as of yet. But I think that's why watching the Colts training camp or watching the news that's coming out of Colts training camp is so key, because you get to hear those little tidbits and those whispers and those things that you hear about Richardson heading into deeper and deeper into camp. And it's like, is it possible that we could see Richardson week one?
Right.
That's why I like training camp, because you get to get into those notes heading into.
Because you got to figure if Richardson has a decent control of the offense and can, get in out of huddle and, you got to figure he's going to play over Minshew, because what's the upside to playing Minshew, right? There is none. I'm not saying he's not a good player, but my point is you're not depending on him long term. So why not put the guy that that you're banking your future on, that you picked so high? Especially when there's no pressure to win games right now. Nobody's looking at you as a Super Bowl contender,
Yeah, you don't have all eyes on you outside of Richardson, just, his draft price from the 23 draft and all of that is kind of baked into the noise that's coming out. But, that's just another thing that you have to consider. Now, I do want to highlight Josh Downs. He's been making a lot of noise in training camp, because we got one more piece we got to talk about, and that's, all the nonsense that's going on with Jonathan Taylor. But Josh Downs, third wide receiver for the team, more than likely going to be playing out of the slot, because you have bigger targets than Michael Pittman and Alec Pierce playing on the outsides. Does Josh Downs have a potential role in this offense, even though he's a rookie?
Well, from what I've read, he's been showing out at camp. So why not, right? And also, I think when you have a new staff and new energy, I think there's going to be I think there's going to be almost a rewarding of the guys that we see doing it on this field. We're not worried about what you guys did last year, right? I don't think everybody's coming in. When you have a new staff like that, especially when the team's been a mess, I don't think anybody is entrenched in their spot, so to speak, right? And if the reports about Downs are true that I've read, I haven't seen it, but some of the reading I've done about him showing out and things, I'm sure they're going to design some plays for him. Especially if you're playing your rookie quarterback and you want to put him in position to be successful, you're probably going to try to design a few big plays for the young playmaker that you have, right?
Yeah, agreed. And he's being drafted. He's coming off boards as a wide receiver 91. So you could take a dart throw if you want to have. I'm all for having guys that you on your list that you want to stash. Josh Downs could potentially fit that role. I could see him getting targets underneath if they don't want to throw the ball downfield all the time. You have Alec Pierce is probably your deep threat guy, because he's got speed on him despite him being about 6'3", 6'4".
Right.
But if you don't want to go downfield all the time and Michael Pittman is drawing those tougher assignments, week to week, you could have Josh Downs be the relief guy coming out underneath and taking those short passes and trying to get yards after the catch.
Drag wrap, things like that.
Yeah, the close stuff, 5 yard outs, 5-6 yards.
away from the line of scrimmage, trying to make plays. But, you know, when you're in PPR formats, you know, six, seven of those targets and those receptions turn into points. And it's just a matter of whether he can do more with the work that he's given. So I've got my eye on Josh Downs.
I've been reading he's getting a lot of reps with first team. So that's a good sign.
Definitely a good sign. Now, unfortunately, we have to go and talk about Jonathan Taylor. And I don't mean it on his end because he's still one of the best running backs in the league. Unfortunately, his team doesn't want to pay him. He's going to camp. He's at camp, but he's not, you know, practicing or doing anything. He wants a new contract. My hope is that they get this thing squared away. He's on the last year of his rookie deal. He's still considered a top five running back for fantasy. And, you know, you can debate whether or not he belongs on a list in a year to year. He had a bad year last year. Like I said, the Colts offense was horrible last season. But a new coach, new system, Jonathan Taylor, do you see, if he plays, do you see a bounce back year for Jonathan Taylor?
I don't see him bouncing back to what he was numbers wise. Now, you know, I think, you know, physically he may be, you know, a great player, but do I see him like at the top of the fantasy food chain? No, I don't, because I think for running back, you know, there has to be a certain level of competitiveness in the team for the back to get enough carries. And then especially once Richardson takes over, you know, Richardson is going to get some carries. Richardson is going to get some goal line carries. So, you know, that 6 points that Taylor may have gotten, you know, Richardson would get now sometimes. So I just don't see a world where he comes back. He misses training camp. You know, I know he's watching, but he misses training camp. I think he asked for a trade. And if he has to stay there, he's disgruntled or whatever. I just don't see a world where the culture competitive enough for him to be, you know, a top three or top five running back.
Yeah. I'll say from my end, I kind of believe he will bounce back, but I have to agree with what you said about him bouncing back to what he did in 2021. But when you look at that season, I kind of called it that he wouldn't have the same season that he did that year. He was just incredibly efficient in several running back marks, juke free, breakaway runs, yards per carry. It was just, he had an incredible season and he was getting the work on top of it. So he wasn't just getting, you know, he wasn't just getting a low amount of rushing attempts and then turning it into a highly efficient outing. He was at the top in terms of rushing attempts and he was still producing at an efficient level. It was just, it was a great year, but it was just way too, he was just way too efficient to be able to maintain that. And then you had the quarterback change in the offseason. They got rid of Carson Wentz. They ended up with Matt Ryan. And I think that was a mistake.
Yeah.
Not to get off track, but it was kind of unfair to Carson Wentz that you shipped him out after just one season. He had to deal with injuries during training camp. And, you know, they didn't give him enough weapons. You know, at the wide receiver position, T.Y. Hilton was older. He was on his way out. You had Michael Pittman, who was kind of still young, or younger. And it was like, you didn't use the tight ends at all when you had Carson Wentz there. So you had a bunch of guys on the field that you weren't making plays for. It was just, I just didn't feel like they did enough. And then you kind of saw what happened when Matt Ryan came in and it all just went down the tube. But, you know, back to Jonathan Taylor. Yeah, he's not. I don't think he'll have a season like he did in 2021. He was just way too efficient. He was on fire. But
right.
as a top 10 running back, top five, I think he still has the ability to get there. But like you said, it all depends on what the offense is trying to do this year. You're trying to break in a new quarterback. It's just something to consider when you're taking him. And then he's got to get paid. So if he decides that he's not going to sit out, and he's still being considered right now as a top five running back, you don't want to pull that trigger on that ADP and then all of a sudden he don't play. Because this is different from the Saquon Barkley and the Josh Jacobs and the Tony Pollard, you know, franchise tag type situations. You got a guy who wants to get paid, who's on the last year of his deal, and they don't want to pay him at all. They're like, right. The owner just went and shipped out a killer whale for $20 million, but he don't want to pay his stud running back. It's like his offers. So yeah, hopefully there'll be more news coming out about Jonathan Taylor, and hopefully it'll be good news as to, you know, him getting an extension. And I think it's well deserved. He should get his extension because he's still, you know, he's been one of the better backs in the league, especially when he's on the field. So.
But the overall, if you look at the league as a whole, they're just, they seem to be treating backs like they're a dime a dozen. Yes. So saying he's one of the better running backs, but, you know, is great. But unfortunately, you know, if I was in the agent business, I would definitely not choose to represent running backs. That's for sure. That way, because the league just seems to treat them like a dime a dozen. Yeah, unfortunately. So, yeah, it's, yeah. And especially considering the amount of abuse they are taking. But yeah, it's, you know, it's not just him. It's around the league with this running back situation.
Yeah, it's messed up, man. I believe it. We could have a whole segment on that by itself, but I totally agree. It's a mess what they're doing to the running back market. But let's wrap this baby up. We have the Houston Texans as our last stop in the AFC South. C.J. Stroud, the second quarterback coming off NFL draft boards. I mean, not NFL draft boards, out of the NFL draft, the 2023 NFL draft. He's landed with the Texans. They have a new head coach in D'Amico Ryans. Are there any, and we already talked about, you know, rookie quarterbacks and Anthony Richardson, but are there any expectations for C.J. Stroud? Let's do fantasy football and football. First football, what do you think the expectations are for C.J. Stroud?
I think unfortunately for him, he's coming in to, you know, it's Texas, right? So they're football crazy. I think people are going to expect him to play in like a Deshaun Watson, like a, you know, Deshaun Watson's best level. I think that's what people are going to expect. I don't think you're really get there, to be honest with you. I just don't know if that quarterback, if quarterbacks from Ohio State, that offense, they just don't seem to translate well to the NFL to me, right? Like who from Ohio State is coming to the NFL and has, you know, reached or come close to reaching what quote unquote was their potential.
Hey, you're giving me homework. I'm gonna have to look that up.
yeah, like think about it. Like there, you know, I mean, so I just don't see, and he's on like what, you know, possibly the worst team in the league, right? So yeah. Either. And he has a defensive minded coach. So I think having a defensive minded coach may help put him in more situations to be successful as in a game manager kind of thing. Eventually once, you know, once they build up their talent level a little more, but I don't think he'll ever be, you know, a top 10 quarterback.
Okay.
In fantasy or in reality, I just don't see that in his future.
Now here, I'll give you the flip side then, because I think that expectations should be tempered for C.J. Stroud this year. But you have to, at the same time, you should keep notice. You know, I looked at his numbers at college with the Buckeyes, finished third behind Caleb Williams in 2022 in the Heisman voting. His numbers, 4,400 yards plus and 44 touchdowns in 2021, 3,600 yards plus and 41 touchdowns in 2022. I think that the potential is there for him to have a successful season, but when you're a brand new head coach and you have a brand new offense that you're trying to implement, you have to, you know, the excitement is there, but the expectation should be level, especially when you consider the fact that you weren't one of the best teams last year. You have new pieces all over the place. You brought in Robert Woods off free agency. You have Tank Dell. You signed Noah Brown. You have John Michi coming back from his illness from last season. You have Nico Collins, who hasn't really translated over to top-end wide receiver production because he hasn't been healthy. But all these moving pieces, you know, you want to have a great season, but as far as like football for the Houston Texans and C.J. Stroud, it's just like, all right, let's wait a minute and see how this kid goes before we start, you know, putting him in the Hall of Fame.
Right. Or, yeah, for him in as a starter in 3 or 4 years. But, yeah, I get
you. You don't trust them Ohio State guys.
I think it's something about the offense, and then I think the same thing for guys from Bama for the most part. I think there's when you when you're playing with people that are always better than the people you're playing against, and you're a quarterback, I think you don't get used to like playing in a dirty pocket, right? Or having to make that little sidestep to get the pass off, or, you know, because like everything can be on timing when your line is, you know, NFL guys and you're playing against guys who are going to be accountants in 2 years, right? So I think it just doesn't, I think it doesn't prepare guys well at the NFL level. And that, you know, I think Bama, I think Ohio State, I think they both suffer from that same kind of thing for the most part, quarterbacks, because, you know, it's easy to look good when everything is on schedule and on timing, right? But can you make something happen on your own, right? And that's why, like, guys, you know, they're guys you never even heard of, like Tony Romo, right? You never heard of Tony Romo coming out of college. Jake Delhomme, you know, all these guys who managed to have NFL careers because they're used to having to make something happen, or, you know, having to wiggle a little bit to get the pass off, or the little sidestep, or just, you know, those little extra things that happen when the talent level you're playing against is equal to the talent on your team. I just don't see a bright future for Stroud, unfortunately. Hopefully I'm wrong.
So is your fantasy expectations similar to your regular football expectations?
Yes, because who from the Texans do you feel like, oh, I got to draft that guy?
I'm gonna keep it a buck. I love Damian Pierce. I think that he's being he's not being talked about enough.
Okay, and the highest you draft him?
No, I'm taking him as our RB2. I'm not gonna reach for him. He's floating around between RB 16 or 18, I think, somewhere right around there. That's fine for me. That's a good RB.
The better he does, the less passes Stroud throws.
True.
My point is, there's nobody that he's throwing to that you're like, I need that guy.
All right. Oh, okay, since you brought it up, I really like Nico Collins. And one of the reasons why I like him from a fantasy perspective is that he's so cheap to get. I got him in the 14th round in the Scott Fishbowl draft. 14th round for a wide receiver one who I can take off the bench if he starts to get hot and plug him in. And, you know, you get to see what the workload is distributed like. That's a steal. You getting a guy for dirt cheap.
That's true. So that's one guy. There's a lot of ifs.
All right, well, let me be more affirmative.
Okay.
With the draft price for Nico Collins, I'm expecting him to be the wide receiver one for the Houston Texans. I'm expecting I would say about wide receiver three, maybe with some upside, because I don't see the Houston Texans blowing the doors off of teams and putting up a whole bunch of points, but they'll be one of the teams that will be, you know, trying to play catch up and you know, passing a lot more to be able to stay and hang in games or even score garbage time. So getting a guy like Nico Collins in the back of the draft, where I don't have to spend a top pick or a top six, seventh round pick to get a wide receiver one who may just be end up on a flex spot for my team, or, you know, in case of injury, I'm totally with that. I'm in for the values. He's one of my I'm not gonna give everything away. He's just a guy that I really really like to take late.
You're targeting late. But my point is that nothing like, okay, like you would draft even before last year, before Hurts, you know, had an MVP type season, you would have drafted Hurts just because of the guys around him. You know those guys are gonna put up numbers.
Yeah, that's true.
My point is Stroud doesn't quite have that. And, you know, to your point about Nico, I mean, I will tell you this, you know, in life, in cars, in, you know, and in fantasy football, you get what you pay for. So you're right.
Okay. That's a very good counterpoint. You buy cheap, you get cheap.
Now, you know, there's always exceptions, right? There's a guy that can blow up or whatever, you know. You know, but let's just call it what it is. It's the reason he's still there, right? Because all, you know.
That's fair. That's fair. That's that's truly fair. Oh, man. Okay, so what do you think about the other wide receiver options? Yeah, John Michi, Tank Dell. They're likely guys that are going to be still on waivers. And Nico Collins, I won't even fraud. Nico Collins could be a guy that you can get off of waivers, too. If he's being picked up. Yeah. Fantasy Calculator has him at the 14th, I think like the 14th round in terms of ADP. So he can be got for cheap, or he might just be on waivers. So you may not even have to use a draft pick to get him. But do you think come out of the wide receivers?
I definitely think Woods, you know, might be worth a look or whatever. But there's nobody, like none of their receivers or anybody. I mean, even your point, right? Like, you know, you're not drafting Collins in, you know, round 8 or 9, you know, you're talking late. So, nobody on their team strikes me as somebody I have to draft. Now, there will be guys now, you know, I'm definitely going to be keeping my eyes on, especially once we get an idea of like how the offense is going to look. And, you know, there's just so many things we just don't know in my mind that I'd rather use that draft capital on more known quantities in teams. But when you got new staff and then rookie quarterback, it's just so many things we just don't know that I would be very hesitant to use any draft capital on any of their wide receivers or tight ends, to be honest with you.
I can agree with you. I will say this, though. I'm planting my flag on Damian Pierce. Do not let him slide by you. I'm saying it. Don't let Damian Pierce slide by you. I don't care if Devin Singletary is there. He's going to be the backup. He's going to help, you know, alleviate all the pressure, because you do need more than one running back. But Damian Pierce is the guy. He's going to get the workload. Don't. People are out there saying, you know, negative things about my guy, man. That Pierce is one of my guys. I think you can't pass on him. If you like, I'll make a better case on social media when I talk about him on Twitter and stuff. But right now, don't pass on Damian Pierce. He's going to be a problem.
I hear you.
He like, yeah, right.
There's something, but I'm, you know. somebody from Houston has some value to you. I got it.
Okay. There's got to be somebody out there, right? All right. Now, our predictions. AFC South predictions. Who do you think is going to win the division? The Texans, the Colts, the Jaguars, the Titans. The Titans have been there before. They're looking like they're going to have to work back to getting there. Indianapolis, and we kind of set the table already during the breakdown. We already know what the situations are with Indy and the Texans. And, you know, we got the Jaguars looking like a strong possibility. What do you think? Who do you think comes out on top and takes the division in 2023?
I would go with Jacksonville.
Great minds. But give me a reason real quick.
Well, okay. Indianapolis and Houston, new staffs, rookie quarterbacks, right? Generally, a very bad combination as far as wins and losses, right? Rebuilding, you know, both have had a lot of turmoil in the last few years, right? So it's not, you know, so you factor that into, I just don't anticipate much from either team this year. The Titans will be good, you know, but I just think with Trevor Lawrence's growth, I think with Doug Peterson's mentorship and, you know, now second year in the system, they're going to be just better at everything because they're not thinking as much. They're just playing, you know, more off instinct. And so I think that'll be enough, I think, to give them a slight edge to win the division. And also, I think their offense is going to be the most explosive by far in the division, right? Because if you think about what we said about everybody's offense, the only one we expect any real explosiveness from is Jacksonville, right? So I think that'll give them the leg up to win the division with Tennessee being a close second.
Yep. You got my pick. That's the same one I was going to go with, the Jacksonville Jaguars. Another year with Doug Peterson. We saw Trevor Lawrence take the leap once he got an actual good head coach. He's been loaded up with weapons. You know, he's got his guy in Travis Etienne out of the backfield. They added Tank Bigsby. You got Calvin Ridley, Zay Jones, and, you know, he's got the pieces around him to take that next step. And like you said, the Jaguars offense is going to be one of the more explosive offenses in that division. It's theirs. It's basically theirs for the taking. They have to probably go through Tennessee to get it done. But yeah, I can see the Jaguars winning the AFC South. You might have, I would say you might have the Colts as maybe a dark horse, but that's a big stretch. You know, like you said, they have new everything. So instituting a system is going to take some time. And if you fall behind earlier in the season, it's kind of hard to pick up things and try and get back into it, especially when you have so many good teams in the conference alone, and then you have to face off in the division too. So even making the playoffs might be a stretch for the Colts in their first year, but they may be fun to watch. But outside of that, I think the Jacksonville Jaguars are going to be the team that win it. But
yeah,
that'll do it for the show. The AFC has been broken down. We are finished, and now we will get ready to move over to the NFC. But Eric, man, I really appreciate you coming on and helping us break down the AFC South. It was a pleasure to have you on the Finest Show. This has been great.
Yeah, man, it's been a ton of fun. I definitely appreciate the opportunity. I'm going to hold you to bringing me back, so expect me to run media. So everybody, leave a comment telling him, bring Eric back, please. But
Hashtag bring Eric back. This is where we're going to start that up. But thanks again for coming on. Oh, one more time. Make sure we know where to find you. We said it in the beginning, but
yeah,
made it to the end. We gotta, you know, where you handle it.
Okay, so please follow Satchel FF as in fantasy football. Satchel SATCHELFF. All right, you can find us on Twitter, Threads, Instagram, and Facebook at that handle. And also, please go to satchelff.com and enter your email address, and we will reach out to you about being part of our beta testing program. And there will be some benefits and prizes and other things that come along with that. So please, everybody, support us there. We're trying to grow this movement. 100% minority-owned business. I'm pretty sure the only minority-owned fantasy football platform out there, I believe. But, you know, never know for sure. But anyway, just ask for everybody's support. And help us grow this thing all together as we're trying to give a new face and voice. And this is your chance to build in the features that you've always wanted to have and be part of the process. So that's what we're looking
for. All right. So y'all heard the man. Send those emails. Give him a follow on his across his social media and show that support. Thank you again for coming on to the show. We are done. It is time to wrap this baby up. But as always, make sure that you follow the Fantasy's Finest on your favorite platforms as well. And you can follow us on across our social medias. That is it. We will talk to you guys in our very next episode. Until then, y'all be safe and peace.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy's Finest podcast. Be sure to join the community on Facebook and follow us on Twitter too at the Fantasy's Finest. See you next episode.